Yo Pods, check out Meet Mitch and Leewood for award-winning barbecue, outstanding atmosphere, and your destination to watch all your favorite March Madness action. Tailgating for opening day? Place your order online and pick up on way to the game. Meet Mitch Barbecue, East 95th and Mission in Ranch Martin or Shopping Center.
You are listening live to the program. Your teams, your town, your program.
Beautiful swing.
Yeah, pretty.
Back to the middle and into center field. Garcia turns, and there he goes to third. Here comes Dubon's throw. It's going to be late, and Junior goes into second base. Vinny Pasquantino has driven in his sixth, and he's driven in his seventh. Center field. That is a seven-run bottom of the first inning. Junior gets it up into the wind. Deep right field. Gone! And the Royals hang a nine on the scoreboard in the first inning.
Wind's going to blow that.
It will. Still carrying. Yes! Still carrying. And that is his second home run of the day. And it is a 7-0
And now, a man who's been in every studio in the building today, Jack Johnson.
Hey, thanks, Kay, for the introduction. You are listening to the program on Sports Radio 810 WHB. I am your host, Jack Johnson, filling in for Seren Petro today, but the usual crew still here. We got Curtis Siebold and Adam Dravetta with us for a long four-hour edition of the program. Going to have lots of fun and talk about the intro there. How long was that, Adam? 2 minutes? 3 minutes? That's one inning for the Royals.
Like yeah. Right.
One inning. Nine runs for the boys in blue who capped off a perfect homestand. 7-0, beat the hell out of Chicago, and did pretty much the same to a Houston Astros team that, by the way...
Even more so.
Yeah, even more so. Worse record than Oakland right now. Who would have thought that?
Nobody.
You looked at the beginning of this schedule for Kansas City to begin the year. Three playoff teams in the first four series. The only other one was Chicago, of course, but they faced Minnesota, Baltimore, Houston, all of them out of the way. For now, at least the first time around, yep. They're going to see Baltimore next weekend to open up the next homestand for the Royals. But how can you not be impressed with 9-4 and the best run differential in baseball?
By far the best run differential in baseball. They've played more games than I think anybody else. But still, they're pretty far out there. And people can quibble with the level of competition that they faced last week, a White Sox team that going into the year we knew was going to be dreadful and is every bit of that, and an Astros team that has been down. Their pitching staff's been decimated by injuries, but they've beaten those teams the way a really good team does beat them. And I said this yesterday, that if the 2015 Royals had played these last two series and they'd gone exactly the same way, no one would be saying, yeah, but it's the White Sox and it's a down Astros team. They'd be saying that's what a really good team does in those situations. They blew out the White Sox once, won two close games, and then came from behind. This week, they came from behind, won a close game, and then had two blowouts against a team that was outmanned. That's fine. There's no assailing this seven-game homestand. I don't think there's anything you can put on it that discredits anything they've done, because they've been impressive in all facets. They've been impressive with the rotation. That's continued to be good, even though you've had some guys that haven't quite been as good as they had been earlier, a couple of starts, but they're still second in the league in starter ZRA. The bullpen has come around, has been fantastic. After being awful, they're little better than the midway part of the pack as far as bullpen ERA. They've been terrific this last week. The bats have taken off. They're in the top five in slugging and top five in OPS. The players you expected to be good have been good, with the exception of Vinny Pasquantino, who now is getting back to being hot. The pitchers you thought were going to be good have been good. They're not going to play 640 ball, but that's not a fluke that they're five games over. This is a team that has talent in a lot of areas, and to some extent, it's come to fruition, and maybe a couple of guys have played a touch over where they would over their heads, but not that much. I don't think you can look at this and go, "Wow, this is going to collapse."
I think if you're looking at it and saying this is going to be a collapse, you're probably just scarred by the last handful of years in Kansas City that we're just supposed to be bad in April. And it's unfortunate that the 2021 team had the best record in April, to begin the year. And I think back then we didn't really pay attention to run differentials. Like, they're winning games. They're 7 games over .500. That's what good teams do. They just win baseball games. But it's different this time around. The 16-9 team in 2021 in the month of April, they had a negative run differential.
Right.
Like, when they were getting beat, they were getting pounded.
Yes.
And this baseball team, and you can say small sample size. I get it. 13 games is minuscule over the scope of 162 games.
Less than one-tenth.
Yeah, it's a very minor portion of the year, but it's important.
Right.
I mean, you just brought up, there's not much you can nitpick unless you just want to nitpick. You don't want this team to be good. I mean, the plus 39 run differential, they're 9-4. I remember I once brought up the run differential after the first series. The Royals were the only team with a positive run differential and a losing record. And it was easy to go, well,
three games.
They won 11-0 in game three. They didn't score in the first two. But then you just kind of saw the Baltimore series. Competitive, likely should have swept them if the bullpen was on their A game. And that's not going to happen every single time you go to the pen. Then they come back home, decimate the White Sox. The White Sox are going to be terrible this year, but what are you supposed to do to bad teams? You're supposed to beat up on them. The Royals were that bad team last year, and everybody did what they did to the White Sox in that second homestand of the year. Then the Astros come in. You can cry about the injuries, the rotation being banged up a little bit. Justin Verlander not there. They lose Framber Valdez, though I don't think Valdez was supposed to throw in that series at any point. He had kind of gotten hurt in the series before, but again, still a really good lineup. The top of that order, Jose Altuve, Yordan Alvarez, Kyle Tucker, Chaz McCormick down in the middle of the order. There were four or five really good hitters you had to deal with all series long. And aside from the first game, it wasn't really close. The Royals ran away with the last two games of that series. And that's where I go, okay, what do you want to nitpick at this point? If you really want to believe this fallout is coming, this team's going to be bad. The rotation's not going to be as good. The offense is going to be as good. That's fine. But I feel like we're also missing the point of, why can't we just bask in really good baseball right now? That's exactly what they're doing. And it is 13 games, but this is a month that has buried this team for so long.
Yes, and wherever you thought the Royals could get to this year with their record, in a over 500 sense, they're five games over where an average team would be. So they've already banked those games.
Yep.
So whatever your projection might have been, unless you projected them to be 9-4, they're probably going to overshoot that a little bit just by what they've done. And also, when you look at how it's been done, a year ago, I kept people saying, when you watch the games, what are you looking for? It's like, how do you judge each night? And I would always say the same thing. If they win because of players for whom the future is bright, the guys they expect to win, that's one thing. Winning games with guys who aren't going to be around when they're ready to win didn't matter. I would have rather last year lost a game in which a good young pitcher had a nice outing or a young hitter had a big day than win a game 5-1 with Zach Greinke on the mound, which they really didn't do at all. But that type of thing. This year, I look at them and their success, and it's coming from guys from which there was expectation. So it seems more legit. The Salvador Perez is hitting. They're winning because Perez is got an .841 slug. Mm-hmm. Bobby Witt Jr., the best player on the team, is carrying them offensively to a degree. That's legit. MJ Melendez is a guy that has been projected to have a high-quality bat. He's got an 1,100 OPS. Nelson Velasquez is a guy who they see power from. He has a 922 OPS. These are numbers are coming from players who either have a track record or expectation, and they're coming through. That doesn't seem fraudulent at all. And one of the guys they expected from, Vinny Pasquantino, now is finally coming around. They're not getting these numbers from guys that they didn't expect anything from, so you think this guy's going to come back to the pack. I don't think these guys are going to come that far back to the pack. Pitching-wise, they went out and got Seth Seth Lugo and Michael Wacha, and a full season of now of Cole Reagans, and those guys are coming through. It's guys they expect success from are finding success. This isn't a bunch of ham and eggers who've been thrown together and are somehow putting up a 2 ERA. These are legit major league pitchers with a lot of upside. So I don't think the pitching staff is necessarily going to – they're not going to throw up a 2.5 ERA. No. Or if they get somewhere in the mid-threes, I think that's a nice target. But I think that looks more possible now because we've all seen – people have been around here a long time have seen some early starts and looked at the guys who are doing it and gone – there's no way.
Yeah.
You know, even in 03, as great as that felt, you looked at Chris George going, how is he six games over 500 with a 560 ERA? You could look at the ancillary numbers and look at who it was coming from and know that's about to fall apart. I don't see that trap door for the Royals on offense or in the pitching staff because they're largely being carried by players for whom, if not greatness, at least success was expected.
Well, it probably feels at this point like the thing that could get in their way is health. I mean, they threw 13 games, just a 13-game sample size. They have been blessed with not dealing with, you know, a nagging injury. Michael Massey and Carlos Hernandez.
Haven't made a move yet.
No, they haven't had to. It should be coming soon, depending how Michael Massey progresses in Omaha. Yeah. He's looked good so far, but I know
but
that.
That's adding someone, not losing someone.
Yes. You're not feeling like you are losing somebody in the lineup. At this point, it'd be Adam Frazier, which for some Royals fans, they'd be all right with Michael Massey taking his spot.
Right.
And you look at what they can accomplish this year. We get so caught up in a hot start and realize they were 56-106 last year. And they go 76-86. That's a 20-game improvement. And I know a lot of people here are not going to celebrate no postseason, right? But I think you do have to start somewhere, and it was vital that this team got it started immediately. Go ahead, Adam.
No. I just wanted to jump onto exactly what you're saying. Is remember John Sherman, and people didn't like this quote, but I think we all knew what he meant looking back, when he said, I want to see what a wild card team looks like. That's sort of what you're seeing. They're building, even if this season doesn't wind up in postseason play, you feel like 2014, you know, was amazing and the run to the World Series and, of course, finishing it off in 15. But what did everybody look back at? 2013. They won 80-something games. They came close. That's in that, I think, comes back to also the depth that you guys are talking about, that's the next step. They've clearly taken a massive step forward to where they want to be. It doesn't necessarily mean they're going to get there this year. I don't know that they're lifting any trophies this year. But the next step is the depth. Like, they're taking very clear, concrete steps toward what will be a really good organization by 2025, 2026.
And you mentioned, you know, the injuries they haven't suffered, whereas every other staff in the major league seemingly has lost somebody big. Yes, at some point, one of these guys is going to get hurt and miss a couple starts, maybe three starts, who knows. But in years past, if you lost one of your top shelf guys, there was nobody else to make up the difference. Now, Seth Lugo goes down, you've still got Michael Wacha and Cole Reagans and Brady Singer, who's throwing a sub-1 ERA, and Alec Marsh, who's shown promise. Losing one pitcher isn't going to derail the entire train. And I also think they're much less susceptible, because of the rotation, the consistency of it, they're much less likely to have long losing streaks. Sometimes a team jumps out, and once they kind of crest a little bit, sometimes you've seen teams in the past, they lose 8 of 10 or, you know, 13 of 16 or 17. You're like, oh, they totally. Mm-hmm. I don't see this team going on long losing streaks, because seemingly every night they're going to send out a pitcher that has a pretty good shot of winning that game. Whereas everyone can be put in the role. They don't necessarily have a guy who is a stopper. Maybe Cole Reagans. He has the stuff to be a stopper. Yeah. But we all know what a stopper is. Really, any one of these guys on any given night can be a stopper if they lose a couple of games in a row. And so I think that really helps even things out. I don't see a wheels falling off scenario, at least not for a while, the way these pitchers have been throwing.
Well, you see it all coming together, at least through this first part of the season, because this team has raised the floor so much at talent level. You brought up with the rotation, but now you look across their lineup. They've got a superstar, one of the best players in baseball, in the two-hole. They've got a young budding star leading off in Mikel Garcia, arguably the best defensive third baseman in the American League, because I'd say Key Brian Hayes on the National League side is probably a little bit better than him, but what Garcia's got, less than 120 games at third base, like he can get to that level. Vinny Pasquantino, we talked about, heating up 8 RBIs over his last 2 games. Salvador Perez, his bat has been well-known around this league for the better part of a decade. You know that you can count on him. MJ Melendez, you saw what he did in the second half. You saw what he did in spring training, and now to begin the year. This is the type of hitter that J.J. Bacola, the scouting department, they envisioned when they drafted him, when they developed him. He's got a 15% walk rate right now. He is that guy that can work the count. He's a perfect five-hole hitter. Nelson Velasquez, 30 home run power. You thought maybe because of the slow start in spring that Nick Prado would beat him out. Well, now you look down in Omaha. Nick Prado, I think, is striking out north of 30% of the time. The same issues we recognize with Nick Prado still happening. And that's where the front office went. I'd rather go with Velasquez, who has shown at the big league level, I got 30 home run power, where Prado maybe has not. And Velasquez gets off to a hot start this year. And it's not going to be doable over 162 to have 5 guys with OPSs north of 1,000. But you look at where they could bottom out to, and I think this is the important part of it. When things do go wrong, when they do slump a little bit, how bad is that slump? And when you've got much more talent, last year you couldn't stop the bad slumps because there wasn't the stopper. The lineup wasn't talented enough to go, all right, go face Corbin Burns on the road and see what you can get over the course of 6 innings. It was maybe 2 hits, and that was really pushing it. And now you go, man, Bobby Witt Jr. is more of a premier hitter. Garcia is. Vinny Pasquantino is. Melendez is. Perez, and when healthy, can maybe return to that 2021 form where he ran into 50 home runs. And that is the exciting part about this team, is that if you are the doomsday prepper here and you're going, I'm not buying in, I'm not going to the games, I'm not subscribing to Bally Sports because I just know they're going to be terrible by the summertime. You can take that approach, but what we have in this snapshot of 13 games is a good baseball team, and one with a lot of players that have done this before, right? You have Cole Reagans as your ace. He was the opening day starter. He's got the best stuff. Then you have Waka and Lugo. Last year, if they just duplicate what they did in San Diego and bring it to this year, that's good enough for rotation. Brady Singer isn't going to have a sub-1 ERA this year, but he looks much more like 2022 Brady Singer than last year. And the bullpen, all you need to do is even out. You just need to be middle of the pack, and they're going to have a chance to compete in the American League Central.
And before the break, one of the you mentioned 76 wins, which I thought was interesting. I didn't know maybe if you were going this way, because I know you kind of think about along the same lines as I do on these things. You know what team went from 100 losses to a 76-win season, had a hot start, cooled off, and went to 76-86? The Pirates last year. And that might be, they were 20-8. They were way out there. Yep. And they cooled off, and they weren't as good the second part of the season. They were a little ahead of the curve, but they're 9-4 this year, and they look like they've got maybe some legs to stand on. So maybe they're the Royals maybe a year early, but they are certainly showing signs of getting back to a place for at least getting back to a stage from which you can then launch yourself into the postseason.
Even if it's just for the first 13 games of the season, baseball feels back in Kansas City right now. It's a really fun time watching the Royals, who will begin a 3-game series tonight against the New York Mets in Queens. We'll take our first break of the show. When we come back, let's talk some Chiefs football and Rashee Rice next on the program on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Well, it's good to have a uplifting bumper tune for the
I love it.
Head into the weekend.
I love it. Well, if you're just tuning in, this is the program on Sports Radio 810 WHB. No, I'm not Seren Petro, but you probably knew that by now. I spent enough time around
I was able to sniff
Seren.
Her out, yes.
Yeah, just a little bit.
You walked in, I was like, that's not
it's
him.
It's not Seren. Where's the Syracuse sweatshirt?
Yeah. He's taller.
But
he's not wearing the hoodie.
Clearly, he trusted me enough to take on this responsibility. I spent enough time down in Surprise, Arizona, with Seren. He thought, let's give this a try, and we'll see.
That was good stuff.
Sink or swim. Sink or swim time here on the program. And we're going to pivot to some Kansas City Chiefs news involving maybe the biggest story of the offseason so far for the Chiefs. We didn't expect it to go this way. You thought going into the offseason, let's get a deal done with Chris Jones. That happened. Mm-hmm. Check that box off. You get a wide receiver. Hollywood Brown comes to Kansas City. Check that box off. And everything seemed like it was going in a positive direction. You bring back some guys to extensions. Drew Tranquil, Mike Dana now. You do lose L'Jarius Sneed.
Everyone on the defense.
Everyone on the defense is coming back.
With the exception of L'Jarius
Sneed. With the exception of Sneed. And so you feel like, compared to last year, this is a much more uplifting offseason. And then this Rashee Rice news happened, and it's pretty much taken over the Chiefs football news over the last couple weeks.
Because it's not just what had happened, it's what's happening. And,
yes.
And it certainly has at least significant ramifications for them on the field, obviously. So it isn't just a situation where something happened away from the field and you just, once it's adjudicated, you push it aside.
And it's going to be ongoing moving forward. I mean, we've got the NFL draft coming up, mm-hmm. and this is still going to be a focus. And this is a big point, because what do the Chiefs do in the draft now with the unknown, right? What can happen from a situation like this, and how do you now approach the 32nd overall pick in the 2024 NFL draft?
I think we discussed this a little bit with Mark Bullrichter yesterday, who will be with us for our draft coverage when the draft is now 13 days from now. And I think there's a considerable school of thought that I think has some wisdom behind it, and that is that you shouldn't let the potential loss or knowing loss of a player because of suspension or whatever impact what you do with a key draft pick that year, because you're going to play years past this. Mm-hmm. And to make a draft pick specifically for this year leads to teams oftentimes reaching. So I don't think they should. I don't think the fact that they could lose Rashee Rice from anywhere from 2 to 8 games should increase the likelihood that they draft a wide receiver. It might, but I don't think it should. The difference is they've already put so much into this being an historic year. Like in a normal year, I wouldn't think that. I'm not 100% sold on it this year because they've put so much into the historical significance of the three-peat. The Chris Jones being back is I think, a factor in that is what this year possibly means. So that might move the needle a little bit, but I still think they're better off, regardless of what happens with Rashee Rice game suspension. I think they should still approach the first pick of the draft they have in the draft exactly the same way as they would have if none of this had happened. If the best guy that's at that spot is a wide receiver, sure. But to think we need a guy, so let's move. Maybe they maybe make a move up to get a guy.
Yeah.
I think that should not change at all based on what is happening or how many games Rashee Rice misses, because this is a team that's window, yes, for history is this year, but its window for winning championships is long, and I think it should be treated that way.
It's tough to speculate in something like this, and you really want to wait till the finality of it happens. So when you know about the suspension, you know the length of it, because I want to go back to what you said with 2 to 8 games. Let's say it's in that ballpark. Well, then it's just about, do you feel you can weather the storm, right? Charles O'Menihue last year, he was out the first 6 games of the season. They felt like with this defense, this defensive line, you can get through the first 6 games of the season. He's back. He can transform your defense. We know the type of talent Rashee Rice is. And mm-hmm. let's just, you know, throw for the hypothetical out here. It's 6 games. You look at who you added in the offseason. You get Hollywood Brown. And it comes down to, do you think in those first 6 games, you can get through at 4-2? 4-2, we don't know what the schedule will look like in those first 6 games. But if you get through 4-2, I mean, we saw last year the Chiefs were struggling on Christmas Day. So it's not like if you had a bad performance in those first 6 weeks, it's, oh, they're never going to be as good again. But I am fascinated by what Brett Veach is looking at, not just in the draft, maybe who's even left there in free agency.
Mm-hmm.
Do you look at somebody on your current roster, Kadarius Toney, Sky Moore? They're still there. Do you feel like they could have that bounce back paired with Hollywood Brown? You have Travis Kelce back up. Let's just get through this suspension era. And again, it's not the best to speculate because we really don't know what this is going to look like until it's all said and done, until we have the finality.
And they won't know that by draft day.
No, they won't.
They won't know what they have to deal with.
But it's also not uncharted territory for this team, because remember when they drafted Hardman in the second round, that Tyreek Hill situation was going on. And I think a lot of people thought they drafted Hardman because they needed a gadget player, a punt returner, a speed guy to pair nicely with Mahomes, with the unknown of what would happen to Tyreek Hill, and then it ended up not really becoming much. Yeah. And he got to play alongside Mecole Hardman. But I almost just think that was just a little bit of insurance there. You know, maybe they had identified Hardman was their guy, and that wasn't changing.
Did they draft Felix Anyadike Uzomah last year because they knew they were going to be able without Charles Omenihu for a while? They figured four, it ended up being six, but was that move because of that? If it was, I don't know that I agree with that with that strategy, but I didn't build a three-time Super Bowl champion. That doesn't mean that everything Brett Veach does is right because he's got titles, but you do have to factor in that he knows a little bit more about what that roster needs than I do. But that was the situation with Omenihu that actually worked out better than they could have ever imagined.
Absolutely.
They had one of the best pass rushes, one of the best defenses in the NFL, top two defense in points allowed without him even playing. And when he came back in, he did while he was able to play. Certainly was an addition. But you'd like to think that the Chiefs on offense could find a way to work their way through not having Rashee Rice while they without having to overextend to put someone in that spot at the beginning of the year. So I stress that I don't think it should make one whit of difference what they do in the first round draft, but I think there are probably a lot of people that subscribe to the other school of thought. You should try to decide what makes this team the best team it could possibly be once the playoffs start, because they're going to the playoffs unless Mahomes suffers a catastrophic injury. But if that happens, and what you did in the draft doesn't matter anyway. Put the team together so it can be the best possible team it can be when January comes around. I wouldn't worry that much. I wouldn't worry too much about the first 4 to 6 weeks of the season.
Well, I'm sure we'll find out here in a couple of weeks what Brett Veach and that front office is thinking about who they want to add to the two-time defending Super Bowl champions and how they can boost their chances to make it a three-peat. This team is certainly putting themselves already this offseason as a front runner, but we'll see what else they're looking to add in the NFL draft. We'll take our second break of hour number one here on the program. When we return, Kansas football has a spring game coming up, and we're going to talk with a guy who covers the team, and Nathan Swaffer of 24/7 Sports. He's coming up on the program on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Gotta wait for that post, don't you?
We are back here on the program on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Had to wait for the drop.
I knew it was coming. Yeah, we call it the post, or whatever you call it. Yeah, that's because it's going to happen in the middle of you talking if you don't wait for it to
that's
hit.
True.
So you want to. Sometimes it takes a little while to get to that.
Yeah, and this can throw me off. Point. It's loud in the heads, but I'm also controlling my volume, so I can always change that. That's probably more so on me than anything.
I do the same thing. We all do the same thing.
We all live with same problems here. Well, we're going to talk some Kansas football. They got their spring showcase tonight in Lawrence, and you can listen to that on Sports Radio 810 WHB. So we're going to get a little bit more insight from our guy Nathan Swaffer of 24/7 Sports. He covers the team, and he is brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System, an official provider of Kansas Athletics, together with LMH Health. If you have an urgency, orthopedic, or sports injury, the University of Kansas Health System can see you quickly. Learn more at kansashealthsystem.com/sportsmedicine. Nathan, a big game tonight, you could say, or at least just the return of Kansas football. For those that are eager about this upcoming season, the expectations, of course, sky high for Kansas football. What should they hope to hear or at least see tonight in the spring showcase? Did we lose Nathan? We might have lost Nathan.
He was...
I'll try to give him a call back. We're all loaded up. Let me try to call him back.
That's interesting. He was
taken
thrown
off guard,
by the by
my
the,
question was
the question.
I don't
was
know.
Like, I it's too much.
I can't tell you.
I have to jump out.
Anything to add, Monty?
It has been a while since there's been back to back spring games with as much spring showcase. I guess this is what they call it, with as much anticipation. I mean, it's really, usually this has just been, okay, whatever. The guys can get together
they're playing
and bang
each
around
other.
And they're going to go out and lose 10 games. But but it is certainly changed the tenor of the fandom that now they're going to play in a stadium that you're not used to playing in, but the people actually are looking forward to something like this. It's clearly a new era of Kansas football from a fan standpoint.
It certainly is a new era, and we're going to have a new phone call here. Nathan, do you read me?
As of right now, I do. I don't really know what happened there.
It's all good. We got you loud and clear now. And so I'll just repeat the question I had for you, and hopefully you'll be able to hear me on the other end. But Spring Showcase tonight up in Lawrence, what should fans be hoping to hear or see in this really the first chance to see the 2024 Kansas Jayhawks football team?
Well, I think fans shouldn't get their expectations too high that you're going to see a lot of the offense that you'll see in about 4 or 5 months here when the new season comes around. But things that people should be looking for is what are some of those second and backup guys really going to do in this game? Because for as good as it is to see some of those big names, you know, the Devin Neals, the Jalen Daniels, the Melo Dotsons and the Kobe Bryant, seeing them play for the first time since the season ended, a lot of this is just a practice session. It's a lot of getting those guys comfortable, especially with some of the newer guys, the backups. And so it's not that you're not going to see some of those first-teamers get in there, but maybe only see them for one or two drives of this quote-unquote spring game. It's more just a practice. But I think fans should be looking for some of those newcomers like Isaiah Marshall at quarterback, maybe somebody like Dak Brinkley, who came in with this freshman class as well. He's been getting a lot of work in this spring. And then maybe some of those younger running backs like Harry Stewart, Johnny Thompson. A lot of those younger guys, I think fans should be looking at and seeing their first time in a KU uniform and what they can really do.
Now, I know for a lot of Kansas fans, this scarring they had from last year at the quarterback position, not that they didn't get great play. Jason Bean was phenomenal filling in for Jalen Daniels, but it's that point exactly, filling in for Jalen Daniels, the health right now. We've seen some footage, some video of him out there practicing. He's bouncing around. Looks like the old Jalen Daniels. Are you able to tell me confidently right now he is at this spring showcase, he's been practicing 100%, no limitations, or is it still kind of easing him back in there?
It's certainly been more of an easing back in to practice. You know, if you look at Twitter, certainly Jalen Daniels has been the talk of spring practice among the fan base, but he's still working his way back in, but progressively he's been doing more. He's starting to get into more drills that he hadn't been doing at the beginning of spring practice. He's maybe not 100% yet, as they don't want to re-aggravate anything by any means. But you'll probably see a little bit of him tonight, probably not that much, because, like I said, they're still kind of easing his way back in. But absolutely, he has been practicing. He's been doing more as the spring period has gone along. And I think we'll see at least a little bit of him tonight, but I don't think fans should expect to see Jalen Daniels at full 100% out there looking like he was when he wasn't hurt last season.
Should fans feel like they can expect him to be healthy for an entire season? Because they don't have the fallback position they had a year ago with Jason Bean. If they're going to truly build or at least sustain, it's hard to build in a 9-win season, but to sustain the success they had or even approach the success they had a year ago, it would seem like he's got to be there the whole season, doesn't it?
Yeah, I would agree with that. To get to their full potential, you do need a healthy Jalen Daniels. Like you said, you don't have that fallback like you've had the last 2 years with Jason Bean. That's not to say that Cole Ballard can't go in there and be serviceable, but he's not Jason Bean, and he certainly isn't Jalen Daniels. So it's obviously a concern for a lot of fans that he hasn't stayed healthy his first 2 seasons in the spotlight. Can he finally do it this year? And I think that's part of the reason why KU has been not fully on the gas pedal. They're easing him back in, making sure that they don't re-aggravate anything, not make a new injury pop up or anything like that. So to reach their full potential, Jalen Daniels absolutely has to be in there. To whether he can stay healthy for a full season, we haven't really seen that yet. So that's something that he has to prove that KU is doing everything they can to make sure that he is as healthy as he can be when we get to the start of next season.
We're talking with Nathan Swoffer, 24/7 Sports, ahead of the Kansas Football Spring Showcase tonight, which you can listen to on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Nathan, you talked about the freshman phenom and Isaiah Marshall. He's really kind of become a fan favorite before even playing a game for the Jayhawks. And to me, when you look at some of his film, you saw him in the showcase, his state championship game as well. It feels a lot like Jalen Daniels 2.0, and I wonder, even with what Cole Ballard was able to give you in that highly anticipated Sunflower Showdown, like, I get this feel that when Jalen Daniels is moving on, when he is going to the next level, whenever that may be, you got to feel like the next guy up wouldn't be Cole Ballard. It would be the guy that played a hell of a lot like Jalen Daniels and Isaiah Marshall. So what would you think of that point of view?
Well, it all depends on how his development goes over the next year. Obviously, he's got a step ahead with coming in and enrolling early and going through his first spring practice. And like you mentioned it, he's kind of Jalen Daniels 2.0, and all the coaches have said that as well. Quarterback's coach Jim Zabrowski literally said he looks a lot like Jalen Daniels. Physically, he moves like him. He has that type of talent and ability. But right now, Cole Ballard probably is that backup because he's got another year in the system. Now, assuming, let's just say, Jalen Daniels departs after next year, it will all depend on how this first-year development has gone for Marshall and how he really has integrated into this system. Right now, we've heard a lot of positive things that he's really learning things on the fly. He's getting comfortable with the offense. But that's such a learning development that it will take a full year to really get a gauge on, will he be ready to take that mantle over Cole Ballard when Jalen Daniels is gone? But it sounds like as of right now, things are off to a really good start, and it's very possible we could see that even following this year.
You look at what's returning for this offense. I mean, it's a loaded offense. It's probably going to be one of the best in the Big 12. Quarterback returns, running back room returns, wide receiver room returns. I know that Lawrence Arnold, I think, correct me if I'm wrong before I move forward, Lawrence Arnold is not going to be playing the rest of the spring. Did I see that right?
Yes, he's been out for most of the spring with a leg injury.
Okay, so no Arnold expected tonight for this team, but hopefully by the time fall camp rolls around, that offense will be in full effect. But it's going to be a different guy in charge of calling the plays, Andy Kotelnicki in Happy Valley, now with Penn State. What can fans expect from Jeff Grimes? How similar will this offense look? Is there a lot of trickery into it, or is it just going to be a completely different look, but still, hopefully for Kansas fans, equally as effective?
Well, it will probably be a similar type of system. You know, coaches can change, but concepts don't. They're going to run the same type of offense that they've been doing. We're probably going to see motion. You're going to see some trickery and some different things that Kansas fans have come to know with this Lance Leipold run offense. But one thing that I would like to see tonight, because one thing that Andy Kotelnicki's offense never did was run anything under center. They've always run out of the shotgun, except for maybe, I think they might have tried to do a tush-push at one point last year, but does that really count? Maybe not. But we've heard from Jeff Grimes, and fans have been very curious. He ran a lot of under-center offense at Baylor when he was their offensive coordinator, and people have been curious to see if they were going to do it this year. And he said they absolutely are. It's the question of how much, and who knows if they'll do it tonight because they've been implementing that. But I'll be interested to see if they do any of that. But other than the running under center, I think this will be a very similar offense to what we saw under Andy Kotelnicki.
We're talking with Nathan Swoffer, 24/7 Sports, ahead of the Kansas Football Spring Showcase tonight in Lawrence. You can listen to that on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Also, another injury, that offensive line in Calvin Clemens. Who do you think is going to be the next man up at the left tackle position? I feel like Logan Brown, the transfer from Wisconsin a couple of years ago, might be the front runner, but you follow this team a lot closer than I do. What will Kansas be doing at that left tackle position?
It seems right now it's Logan Brown's position to lose, at least for now. Now, Clemens should be back, hopefully, for fall camp, which gives you some really good competition there. But we've heard a lot of positive things surrounding Logan Brown yesterday. We just talked to new offensive line coach Darryl Asfaria, and he's been very impressed with what they've seen from him and how his development has gone. It's been tough going for him because he's been dealing with some nagging injuries over the past year. Obviously kept him out for most of last season, and we didn't really get a look at the former five-star recruit. But this year, it sounds like things have started to click. They're coming together. And even if Calvin Clements was still healthy, Logan Brown could very well still beat that left tackle number one for KU. So we'll probably see some of him tonight, still working his way back from some injuries. But the buzz surrounding Logan Brown has been very positive, and I think it bodes well for KU.
Last week, ESPN had their 10 college football experts rank the top 10 coaches in the country, 1 to 10, and they used kind of the AP format, 10 points for a first-place vote, 9 for second. Lance Leipold finished 9th in the nation. Eli Drinkwitz was tied for 15th, and Chris Klieman was tied for 20th. That's pretty good. Top 10 ahead of Ryan Day of Ohio State. Does that seem a little lofty, or is that you think that's deserved? Is that he should be considered one of the top 10 coaches in football?
Well, you can only look so far into some of those lists. But to me, it's not so much about where he's ranked, but how much respect he has garnered around the country for what he's done. Everybody saw what he did at Buffalo and the powerhouse he built at Division III Wisconsin Whitewater, but it's clear that KU was the ultimate rebuilding challenge, and what he's done in such a short time is nothing short of miraculous from a program that was just dormant for years and years and years since 2008 to where they are now, essentially, where they are consistently trying to get in those AP polls, just won their first bowl game in over a decade. And I think that shows how much people around the country are taking notice of what he's doing. And we've seen it in some of those job searches with Washington, especially over this past offseason. People are looking at Lance Leipold as one of those premier coaches in college football, not just because he's gotten K to this point, but because there's still so much more room to grow with this program. It feels like this may just be the start of what could be a really good few next years here for KU with the talent they've got, with the recruiting they're doing. And I think that just shows the respect that people around the country have for Lance Leipold and what he's done in Lawrence.
I said going into last year that it's one thing to go from 2 wins to 6 wins. It's even tougher to go from 6 to 8, that getting to 6 is just getting a program to where it's supposed to be. And as much as that was an accomplishment, that even in a 2-game improvement last year, I think would be much more impressive. He did more than that. He got a 3-win improvement, despite the fact that he lost the best player on his team, his quarterback, a preseason Big 12 Player of the Year pick for almost the entire season. I think his year a year ago pushed him into a different level. What I wonder is, did they jump so far in that second year that if they fall back a game, would it feel like it's a fallback? It seems like they can't move up from 9 wins, can they? If they don't move up to 10 or 11 wins, what's considered a success in this third year?
I think if you're KU, you should be aiming to at least do what you did last year in that 8 to 9 win range. I think that's very realistic for this team, assuming that they can stay healthy and Jalen Daniels can play for most of the year. The ceiling for this team is probably a bit higher, maybe 9 or 10 wins, possibly even competing for a Big 12 regular season title. It's very possible at this point, but it all depends on health. But they're trending in the right direction to probably at least match what they did last year, possibly even do a bit better. But we're so early at this point, there's still a lot of dominoes that could fall. We're not even into the second transfer portal period yet. They could add some guys. They could lose some guys. So once we get to probably around August, when we really get close to the season, we'll have a good idea of where this team really stands and where they probably should aim for with that win count, and whether they really should even be possibly looking at a spot in the expanded college football playoff if things go well enough.
Nathan, thanks so much for your time as always, and enjoy covering the game tonight.
Appreciate it. You guys have a good one.
There he goes. That's Nathan Swofford, 24/7 Sports. Covers Kansas football. We'll be covering the team tonight as their spring showcase begins in the evening. You can listen to that on Sports Radio 810 WHB. That'll wrap up hour number one of the program on Sports Radio 810 WHB. I've been your host, Jack Johnson, filling in for Seren Petro. Danny Unleashed coming up next.
All right, five players have had a two-home run game against the Royals in the postseason. Who was the last one to do it? Brought to you by Good Sense.